Britt. How are you?
Hi, Trey. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Have you had some coffee?
Yes.
Or? Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you all right. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Have you had your coffee?
Okay.
Are you ready to do this?
I'm ready to do it, and I haven't even had a coffee.
Oh, my God. Well, you're way more prepared. Well, you're not. I've had my coffee, so I'm just as prepared as you, but I needed the stimulant, so. All right. I'm going to ask you a lot of process questions. My background is in film production, not journalism, so those typically are the kind of questions that I'm interested in. So I'm just going to start off, and I don't butcher his name. Is it Zal Batmanglij?
Zal Batmanglij.
Batmanglij. Okay. So I was close,
yeah.
But not quite. I knew that I needed to kind of step around some of those
close.
Consonants.
You were very close.
All right. So, since you have collaborated with him on a couple of films in the past, and since you wrote and acted in both Sound of My Voice and The East, what was the nature of the collaboration with him? Because you helped develop the character of Sarah/Jane, and then you're performing the character of Sarah/Jane. So were there ever times where, you know, with him as a director and you as an actor, were there ever times where you're like, I got this, I'm good? Or what was the nature of the collaboration?
I mean, one of the great things about working with someone that you've known for so long and that you trust so deeply, and especially who's someone whose taste and performance you trust so much, is that when we're on set together, I really trust it all as a guide. Like, you know, he's very sensitive to things, and he's a way of talking with actors in terms of story. You know, he'll never come over and give a note that's like, okay, this but faster, or I need you to laugh or cry. He never gives a demonstrative direction. He'll come over and he'll say, okay, that was good. I think, you know, here's where you are in the story. Here's what's just happened to you. Here's what's happening right now. How do you think it makes you feel? And then he'll talk, and then he'll be like, well, what about this, this, and this? And so it's the kind of direction that keeps you inside the story rather than kicking you sort of outside of yourself. So that's one of the reasons I love to work with Saul. And I love to write with him as well, because we both see the world similarly. So it's a lot of fun to write a screenplay together.
That's really interesting. It sounds like at least when you get to the acting portion of it, that he's trying to make a space that makes it less about intellectualizing the moment and more about just reaction and being in the moment.
Yeah, less about, you know, he doesn't make you think about the surface of yourself, like you should cry here, or I need this to be faster or have more energy or look like this. He's talking about things in terms of how the story or this person in the scene is making you feel, or how you're making them feel. And so as a result, you go deeper inside yourself rather than staying on the surface of things. And that's a much better way to work.
That's really interesting. I was going to save this question for later, but it seems like a perfect time to ask it. And that I was, you know, I'm interested in the distinction between the creative process when it comes to writing and the creative process when it comes to acting, because the writing side of it, to me, seems much more like free play. You're sort of unrestrained. You can explore. You can wander. As long as you're being true to the characters in the story, there's some freedom there. But whereas acting, it's sort of editorial and molding. At least that's the way I perceive it, and I'd be interested to hear kind of what the distinctions between that process and your different things that you bring to each side of it.
Between the writing versus the acting.
But, yeah, between creating the role in the writing side and creating
right.
the performance in the acting side.
That's a really good question. I mean, one of the things that's helpful is that when you're part of the writing process, you're sort of allowed to, you have the freedom of pushing the character in a direction that's the direction you want to try as an actor. You know, a lot of times there's the old Hollywood cliche of, like, you know, people see you do a certain kind of character well once, and then every script that you ever see is for that kind of character. it's hard for people to imagine you outside of what they've come to know you for. And one of the great things about writing is that, you know, as an actor, you don't want to play the same part again. You want to constantly, or at least I anyway, and I'm sure other people would say the same, want to keep challenging yourself and doing, creating, finding roles that are outside of you. And so that's a great part of the writing process, is that you get to push the character in a direction that almost to the point of something that makes you feel uncomfortable. Like, you're not sure you're going to be able to pull it off. Mm-hmm. And I felt that about Sarah. You know, she's incredibly different from me. And I don't didn't have any real models for her. And so finding her was finding her sense of morality and also her physicality. I mean, I did a lot of training and I learned Krav Maga and doing my own stunts in the film. So playing something where there was a physical component that was as exhausting as the emotional component was intense. But what's great about acting is that at the end of the day, your job is to, after being really well prepared, to almost like light that preparation on fire or like throw it out and show up to set really willing to be free and be in the moment and see what beautiful, fun, you know, spontaneous things come up, and to let go and allow those things to happen. And so it's an incredible dichotomy of the right and left side of the brain and heart, probably too.
I mean, it's all attached, isn't it? Where with this, and I know that you and Zal wrote both the East and Sound of My Voice together, but where does the germ of the story start? Where does that part of the process start? Is there a specific idea or a moment that you've seen between two characters, or a character, or just a concept that you want to explore? And it might be specific for both films or for either film, but I just was wondering where kind of the germ of the story starts.
Well, it's a couple of things. I mean, one is that Zal and I both love a great espionage thriller. That's sort of one of my favorite genres and one of his favorite genres as well. I mean, we love the Bourne movies. We love Lust, Caution by Ang Lee, all the great 70s thrillers, Alan J. Bakula's movies. So those kind of films really excited us. And then the idea of setting a film like that in the now, instead of having it be some relic of the past, you know, Cold War, Russia, or whatever, it was exciting to think of how can you do an espionage thriller that has its finger on the pulse of what's happening around us? And for us, that was really about the sort of green anarchist or eco-activist or freegan movement that a lot of people in this country, young people, are sort of finding these collectives and rebelling against the system. And actually, I mean, when we started shooting, literally a week before we started shooting, Occupy Wall Street blew up and sort of gave an image and voice to the first time for a lot of the unrest and sort of anti-corporate sentiments that are on both sides of the political spectrum. You know, I think right and left, everybody can agree that corporate greed has gone unchecked, and a lot of people feel that, you know, the banking crisis was sort of like its own kind of like quiet criminal behavior.
Sure.
So it's interesting because it's a film that resonates for people on whatever side of the spectrum they're on. And it also just plays as a straight up like fun espionage, you know, edge of your seat thrill ride. But then I think it leaves you with a lot to think about, which is, those are the kind of movies that we like to watch. So I think we were trying to make something in that vein.
I think the timeliness of this film is really fascinating, because I remember that in like 2000, I was in grad school and I wrote a paper on the ELF, and everybody was
like,
what is this fringe movement? Why would you ever be interested in this? And I was interested in these coded systems and these ideas of collectives that work in pods and that don't actually communicate directly with each other. And it's funny because now, because of Occupy Wall Street, there is an avenue in to this type of organization that I don't want to say normalizes it, because it is still I think, a generational issue more than anything else, and a socioeconomic issue. But we can talk about it. We have a means of talking about it. with it without it just being a bunch of, you know, nuts out there on the fringe. So I think the timeliness of this film is really fascinating.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because it's true. It isn't a fringe movement anymore. Like, a lot of these ideas are things that everyone is feeling, whether they're, no matter what part of the country they live in, no matter what political party they identify with, people are kind of getting the sense that, like, there's some fundamental things in the system that aren't working, mm-hmm. and, like, how do we address that, you know? This group is so exciting, this group of people, because whether or not you think that they're going about it the right way, just the fact that they're wanting to hold these corporations accountable is exciting for people. I mean, I think it's sort of like a wish fulfillment. Like, a lot of people feel like it's sort of a David and Goliath thing. How does David take on the Goliath of the corporation that has wronged them? So, and of course, I think Sarah's a very steady point of view or point of entry for the audience. You know, she's a ex-FBI conservative corporate spy. You know, she's a very ambitious girl who's very focused on her career and wants to do well, and has this experience where she has to go into deep cover, which is really hard. I mean, that means, like, taking on this identity and losing yourself in this other world, and how do you hold on to the identity that you had when you started it all? I mean, it's sort of splitting both sides of the fence, and I think a lot of people feel that about where they are in their lives right now.
Well, and the movie itself asks those questions. It doesn't necessarily give the answers. I mean, I found myself along with Sarah looking at the different characters and going, oh, yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying, but the way you're handling it is repulsive. Or I kind of am into the excitement of the activity, but the actual results or consequences that are going to come to bear are terrifying. And that there's this back and forth that the movie asks these questions without really giving definitive answers. I mean, we have characters who make decisions about where they stand, but on a whole, there is no sort of moral to the tale necessarily. And I think that's really fascinating.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because we felt the same way about it, which is that, like, there's this film is sort of looking at the corporate world and the anarchist world, and it's not saying that, you know, corporations are bad and anarchists are good, or anarchists are bad and corporations are great. It's saying, here are these two spaces. There are good and bad people and good and bad ideas within both. And the question is, like, how do you take the best ideas from both worlds and sort of go a third new way? And I think that's sort of like Sarah's journey and process. Mm. But we certainly don't. I don't think that we, as, you know, writers, take sides. I think we're just presenting the now to the audience and provoking a dialogue, I think, which is more than you get from your usual espionage thriller. So I think that's kind of...
Unfortunately, that's true. It is more than you get from your normal espionage thriller. I think it's interesting that you said that you didn't really have a point of entry for, like, what Sarah goes through, because as I was watching the film, I kept on thinking that her story really reflects that of the filmmaker or the creative. Like, when you're in the process, you cannot take outsiders into it. So somebody that's outside of your collaborator or outside of your artist friends, you know, somebody that's an aunt or an uncle that is a plumber, you can't really take them directly into that process, because it will rupture the process. And those on either side of the line don't fully understand the other side. And I really kind of was looking at this and was going, oh my gosh, is this Britt's first film about filmmaking? And I just don't know. I don't know if there's, I mean, I'm sure that on some subconscious level, these thoughts were playing. You have to find some points of entry to write, you know, about the stuff that you're doing. But I thought that was really fascinating. I didn't know if you were thinking about that or looking at it that way at all.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. You know, I mean, I think the thing that I finally found from a performance perspective that, like, let me into her was this idea that it's really an interesting thing for women to navigate the world, professional spaces that are traditionally held by men. And that there are a lot of spaces that are like that, from, you know, hedge fund banking culture to the FBI or private espionage. You know, most of Sarah's peers are, you know, just working in what is traditionally a male space. So I think to survive in those spaces, women often find themselves divesting a lot of their more feminine qualities or instincts. And I think that for Sarah, this journey or experience is about kind of reawakening some of those things that she's lost, her intuition, her empathy. And as Benji points out at the beginning of the film, when she says, "Oh, you think I'm not tough enough for the truth?" And he says, "No, I think you're not soft enough."
Sure.
And there's something about that journey for her that I think is really impacting, and I think is been really impacting for people in watching the film, is the sense that, like, there is something important to those softer qualities, and they're not necessarily the things that we nurture in the sort of corporate culture we're living in, and yet they're really valuable. They're really valuable essential things: empathy, sort of vulnerability, sensitivity to things, intuition. And so I think Sarah goes through this kind of thawing out that's really impacting for her, and is something maybe as a culture that perhaps we need. You know, perhaps we've all sort of gone too far on the more masculine side of our emotions, and we need to balance it out a bit with the feminine perspective.
I think it's interesting that you bring that, the idea of, I guess, femininity or the difference between a masculine and a feminine role, and these different sort of power structures that work within these different, I guess, career tracks. Because as I was watching this film, and I was noticing just the amount of, like, really talented women that were on screen film that doesn't traditionally have them. Like, if somebody else had made this, you would have been, Sarah's role would have been the only role that was a female. I mean, all you have to do
or
is think
Sarah would have been a guy.
Or Sarah would have been a guy. But what I was thinking of is, like, A Silence of the Lambs, which is an excellent film.
Yeah, yeah.
But Starling is alone. Yeah, she's alone, except for her roommate.
I'm glad you're pointing that out. No one has said that.
Here's why I don't think people are pointing it out. I remember there was an Asian American critic who was talking about the movie Up, and he said, "I finally felt like we had made some ground when nothing was made of the fact that the main boy character in Up is Asian American." And Asif Manvi on The Daily Show said, "I finally felt like, hey, I've made it, when I didn't have to do something as the Arab correspondent, where I could just do a regular thing." And I think that's the way this film works, is that only, like, it's stuff that I look for all the time in film, because that's the nature of the job I'm in, that's the nature of what I do. So I noticed it very quickly, but I don't think most filmgoers who will go to this film and love this film are going to even think about it. And I think that's a huge
and that's
step.
That's cool. You're right. Yeah.
I think that's a huge
that's,
step.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so exciting to hear you say that, because there's so many talented women. I mean, just Julia Ormond's performance alone.
Oh, she's crazy.
She's insanely good. She's a brilliant actress. And these women just don't have enough opportunities or stories that include them. And yet women are a huge part of our society and culture, and are saying and doing and feeling lots of interesting things. But I love that you're pointing that out, because you're right that in any other film, you know, Julia Ormond, Patty Clarkson, and maybe even Ellen's character would have all been men.
Of course,
you know? So
of course.
That there isn't
I love Emmett Walsh, but Patty Clarkson is a crazy, amazing female character actor, basically.
Exactly.
Super
she's
talented.
She's incredible.
Yeah.
And she fluctuates effortlessly, moves effortlessly between comedy, drama. I mean, we got really lucky on this movie, too, I have to say. A lot of...
But even beyond Ellen Page and Ormond and Clarkson, you know, you've got Eve and Tess, so what is Danielle McDonald and Hilary Bock? I mean, those characters would not have been women, and in something else. So you just surround yourself, and it really is kind of equitably split. It's not all women, so it's not an overcompensation, but it's not undervaluing half the population. It's really interesting.
Can I just tell you that this is the most exciting conversation I've had about the movie? I mean, the fact that you're saying this and that you noticed this and that you also recognize that, like, the real trick of it is that no one else will notice.
Oh, I
is so excited.
Well, anytime you need to give me a call and we can have a fun conversation, you just, you know, I'll block out 5 or 10 minutes and we'll just do that. So
I would love that. You can encourage me to keep going, basically.
Awesome. I'm totally excited about this. You know, I've got one more question and then I'll let you go on to other boring conversations. And at the end of your day, you can just call me when you're having tea at home and just be like, I need to get these boring
conversations. I need another 10 minutes.
Exactly.
Tell me what you mean.
Just one more. There are three scenes that I think are just incredibly touching, quiet, visual moments. And I think you probably already, I mean, I hope you're anticipating this, but there is the eating scene, the spin the bottle scene, and the washing scene. And I see these totally linked. And it's, I mean, because the entire film is kind of exploring these ideas of control. So in the washing scene, I believe it's Tess says, you know, we'll stop anytime you want. You're in control. And I think that is, as much as it's a statement, it's a question throughout the film, like who's in control, where is this control? But these moments seem almost in direct antithesis to, it's a tiny little throwaway comment that Izzy, that Ellen Page's character, gives when she's talking about Doc's profile picture or profile on Facebook. And he's like, yeah, you know, this person comments and that's why you don't even think that you haven't seen this person in 3 years.
Right.
And that you have these, and it's funny because in another film, like, you would have put too fine a point on that sort of, oh, this is virtual relationships and this is real, tactile, physical, and emotional relationships. But I think in this film, you just kind of show it. It just is part of the fabric, and I think it's really interesting. But I found those three.
Oh, my gosh.
I found those three.
What you're saying. I'm going to get off the phone and I'm going to just, like, go find Dahl and tell him all of these things. He's going to be so excited that somebody watched the film and felt these things. Like, it's really very cool. I mean,
see, this is why
you don't know when you're making the movie what is going to come across or not. You don't know that if you're, like, have these breadcrumbs, you're, like, leaving in the woods to get to the lead yourself home or somebody home, but you don't know if the breadcrumbs are big enough or if the bird ate them or what happened in the process of making the movie. And so it's nice when someone's like, oh, no, I picked up that crumb and the next one and the next one and the next one, and I'm with you. Like, I see you. It's a really nice feeling.
Well, you know, I know that I think the limited release is the 31st. So if I'm alone, which I really don't think I will be, but if I am, you and Dahl can call me and we'll all just have a party together. So
that sounds brilliant.
it'll be a good time. But yeah, do pass that on to Dahl, because I really do. I mean, this year has been kind of crazy for films. For me, like last year, I think that some films flew under the radar, but a lot of the big films, I'm largely unimpressed by a lot of major releases. But I thought that there were some really excellent small films out there last year. But so far this year is on a pace to just kind of tear it up. I mean, there's been Stoker and Spring Breakers. I got the opportunity to talk to Harmony Korine also, and he was a blast. And the conversations are similar, that it's like, yeah, I just threw stuff in there, and it's all part of the texture of the film, and it's all meant to kind of lead you. I mean, kind of your breadcrumb analogy is a perfect one. Is that you put things
in there.
I
think you're just a very sensitive. I'm so sad. We just arrived at some place, and I have to dive into an interview. But I've had the loveliest time talking to you, and I'm going to pass on all of your insights because all of you can appreciate them so much.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And
my pleasure.
I hope to talk to you with all of your films.
Oh my gosh, me too. It would be so my pleasure. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's bright to my day.
Take care.
Okay, fine.